Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the FirstGroup plc trading update call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, the 3rd of October 2013. And I'd like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Tim O'Toole. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for joining our pre-close trading update for the 6 months to 30 September 2013. I'm joined today by Nick Chevis and Rachel Borthwick. As many of you know already, Chris Search, our group finance director, is unable to join us today as he is recuperating from an operation. He expects to be back in the next couple of weeks and we'll catch up with you at the interims on 6 November. Permit me a few comments by way of introduction and add further color to the statement we've issued this morning, and then I'll open the call to your questions. The key point is overall trading is in line with our expectations, and the performance in each of our divisions is consistent with our plan, which means the transformation in UK Bus and First Student is continuing as previously described. First Transit trading remains strong. Greyhound's trading strengthened through the second quarter from the difficult climate of the last few quarters. And rail growth remains strong in line with the rest of the industry. In addition, we are announcing today that we have signed an agreement with the Department for Transport to operate the Great Western Railway franchise through September 2015. Turning to the individual divisions, I'll start with First Student. Revenue is up slightly, although not as much as we had hoped, coming off a comparison with last year's effects of Hurricane Sandy. We continue to work through our turnaround plan of implementing uniform practice across our hundreds of locations. As I've described it previously, we are grinding out a large number of small improvements across those locations in order to solidify our leading position in this market. Our margin guidance for the first half of slightly ahead of the prior year still stands. Our transit division continues to do very well with growth ahead of last year's pace, while maintaining 7% margins. Growth in the first half has been driven by opportunities in the paratransit and shuttle segments. And while we remain bullish and proud of our performance in transit, the second half offers slightly fewer significant bidding opportunities, such that the growth for the year should be closer to last year's 7%. Greyhound saw some improvement in trading in the second quarter from what we saw in quarter one in the last 6 months of last year. But that summary obscures very different results in the separate segments of the business. Greyhound Express, Bolt Bus, and Yo Bus, which are our high-end point-to-point services, continue to see strong growth with revenues up around 10% for the first half. Trading conditions are much different for traditional long-haul Greyhound, where revenues are down in the face of tough economic conditions. The demographics of traditional Greyhound customers are similar to those of Walmart, Target, and similar businesses, and you will note similar commentary in their most recent results. For the first half, we expect revenue overall to be down around 2.4%. As we said at last year's results, however, our more flexible business model in traditional Greyhound allows us to flex miles and costs in the face of tough trading conditions, such that we remain confident in achieving our plan, and we are encouraged that the market is showing signs of recovery. In UK Bus, our like-for-like revenue growth, 1.6%, reflects our repositioning of the business by reducing fares to build volume and restore a competitive profile. We are, as Chris warned at the close of the year, in the early stages of this recovery plan, and this year does face tough year-on-year comparisons because of the Olympic revenues, pension auto enrollment, and other factors that we enumerated last year. Yet I am very encouraged by the results we have seen in those communities where our repositioning of the business is furthest along. In places like Sheffield, Rotherham, Doncaster, and Manchester, we are seeing volume growth well beyond anything that First has delivered in many years. Just yesterday, we announced in partnership with the Mayor of Bristol a new package of services and rates for one of our key markets, Greater Bristol, so we are starting to see the spread of these efforts. This repositioning of our UK bus division will take another couple of years, but it is gratifying that our changes are generating the hoped-for response in the marketplace. In rail, we again saw continued good performance, both in underlying passenger volumes and in revenue growth. That performance was sustained even though this was a difficult period for operations as a result of infrastructure failures. We and Network Rail are joined constructively to restore and maintain our service to the better standards we've enjoyed more recently. The refranchising process has made important progress recently. ITTs for the TSGN and Essex Thameside franchises were issued last week, and we, of course, are shortlisted in those competitions. We were also shortlisted for the Scottish Government's Caledonian Sleeper in the period, and today we have signed what's called a single tender action with the DfT to operate FGW until September 2015. We know FGW and its requirements better than anyone else, and we look forward to working in partnership with our local stakeholders in the industry to continue progressing improvements to the route. Those improvements not only include the rebuilding of the Reading Interchange and Station, but also the planning and enabling works for the intercity express trains, which will transform the fleet, other new trains, the electrification program, the resignaling of the line, and the Crossrail coordination works. Our management is best placed to work with Network Rail and the department to deliver all that work while minimizing the disruption for passengers. Today's agreement gives us the DfT scope to explore further improvements on new trains, capacity, seating, timetabling, and Wi-Fi introduction. We not only want to take our passengers through the period of this work with the least amount of disruption, we want to deliver improvements and marginal increases in capacity now so that passengers are confident in and excited about the long-term transformation of their railway. So, to sum up, trading at the half year is in line with our expectations, which assume continuing economic headwinds in a number of our markets. As the UK's largest and most experienced rail operator, we believe we are in a good position to maintain a significant position in the industry as the next round of franchising gets underway. In our other businesses, particularly student and bus, we continue to work through methodical programs which will improve our operating performance and deliver sustainable returns over the medium term. I will now hand back to the operator so that Nick, Rachel, and I can take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from Alex Brignall from UBS. Please ask your question.
Morning. Thank you very much for taking the questions. I just have two, if I may. On Greyhound, quickly, could you just give us a little bit of a split of volume and price? I'm particularly interested in the traditional business, but then again, for Express and for Volt Blue, that would also for Volt Bus, that'd be helpful as well, please. And then just one other question in terms of the reference you made to school bus in the U.S. and obviously the turnaround you're making in the regional bus business in the U.K. Are there any plans to close any businesses that you don't see as worthwhile to turn around in regional bus and any contracts in the U.S. that you see as unprofitable? Thank you very much.
Okay, can I just take the Greyhound thing? I mean, the way in which we would see it at the moment is, and I haven't got the absolute numbers here, but the Greyhound Express is very much driven by volume. So that would be predominantly volume, the Greyhound Express, and the residual business volumes are more about price. The revenue is more about price in the residual business.
As far as your question about school bus, no, we actually wouldn't see that we would be selling off businesses because in that business you tend to bid up or the business goes out. So it rolls off on its own terms. There have been a few kind of high-profile changes this year because, of course, the Boston business rolled off, and we did kind of walk away under the terms of the contract of a big piece of business in Columbus that was not trading profitably, but that's largely the exception.
Okay, thank you. I guess what I was referring to is just walking away from contracts, but that very much covers it. Thank you.
No, we never walk away.
Yeah, we don't. We wouldn't walk away for reputation reasons. we would always just close out a contract per its terms.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jamie Rowbotham from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Morning, all. I've got four quick ones, and they're all on UK bus, please. The first is, can you remind us what last year's financials for UK bus looked like in terms of revenues and operating profit, stripping out London and the regional buses that you disposed of, the regional businesses you disposed of, just so we're clear what the base is to which we should apply the 1.6% like-for-like passenger revenue growth that you've just reported, as well as the various cost headwinds we know about, in order to get a bit of comfort around how this year is shaping up. Second, we keep reading about the fares being cut a lot, 30% in Manchester, 25% in York, to stimulate demand. Is it fair to say that you're doing that on quite a selective basis, given that in the main, if I'm not mistaken, fares are still going up, given that at the divisional level you've had a yield increase of about 1% in the first half? Third, are there any specific cost savings that you've made in the first half that could be offsetting the various cost headwinds that we already know about in UK bus? And finally, an industry journal recently highlighted some tough competitive pressures in certain areas for you, like Devon, where I think Stagecoach with their Gold service and Go Ahead have been adding services, resulting in withdrawals by First Group. This can't be making the transformation program any easier, though on today's evidence it seems to be going quite well. Could you comment on how you're dealing with those challenges, please? Thanks.
Well, should I take the first one, Jamie? That was in terms of the comparator data.
Yep.
If you think about the revenues for last year in UK bus, which were what, 1128, in terms of the revenue that was disposed of, that's around about 190 million. And then you've got the Olympics on top of that, which was 17 million. So that would bring you down to about 920 million base.
Yep.
And the IS19 adjusted profit for last year, around about 53.5. The depot closures were all taken out of the profit last year, so the full-year profit didn't have any of those profits in. And you would take out the gains transportation, which is around about 4 million. So you start off at around about 49 million.
Thanks.
And as far as the pricing actions we've taken on, it is proceeding on a local basis. I mean, I can't have this both ways. I can't tell you that we've got to go at this market by market and then issue blanket pricing direction. I mean, it takes time to analyze each one of these markets, analyze the corridors, look at how we should recast it to restore a reliable high-volume business that can attract the kind of volume growth we want to see. And it does require, in many cases, substantial cuts in revenue. I mean, you are seeing us cutting fares where our some of our competitors are able to raise them in a lot of their markets. But we're trying to change the competitive profile. And the trick is for us to do this in a way that net revenue doesn't decline so that we get the volume increase, which is also why this does take some care. As far as the cost savings, we have said that the improvement in margin is about half cost and half to come from price and revenue. We see a substantial opportunity for cost savings, A, from putting in the new buses because the maintenance expense is coming down, and by the more disciplined operations that we talked about as we go through these depot transformation programs, you're eliminating rework. You're eliminating having to put the extra bus out there to replace the bus that broke down, et cetera. So we have substantial cost targets within our budgets in each of our depots. Finally, as far as the competitive response that we're seeing by Go Ahead and Stagecoach and others, yes, it does make your job harder naturally. We're trying to really concentrate our efforts in the local markets, which we feel we can deliver value in a way that will be seen by the local markets and where we'll be identified as a real resource for that local community, as the bus company that they can be proud of and that they want to use and that supplies the dominant service in the area. In some other places, that profile won't hold, and we will just be trying to provide service on the corridors where we can be competitive.
Understood. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Nick.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Your next question comes from Joseph Thomas from HSBC. Please ask your question.
Morning, everyone. I've got four questions running over different parts of the business. First one is quite straightforward. Could you just give us an update on what the situation is in West Yorkshire? Second thing, school buses. You've started the school year now. Can you give us a sense of what you're seeing on charter? Third thing is on Greyhound. What is the split of Greyhound Express relative to other parts of the business now? Because you've sort of often said 20%, but I would expect that to be increasing quite significantly. And then the final one is on UK Rail and the extension that you've signed on Great Western. Would you expect to be securing a similar financial profile on the other extensions that you've got coming up as you've done on Great Western? Thanks.
As far as West Yorkshire, we've made very good progress. You know, all the parties have, the other bus companies, and making proposals that are very attractive to the authorities there for a quality partnership. They continue to explore or talk about a quality contract as an alternative, as you would in any kind of engagement like that. You want to maintain your alternatives, but we're quite hopeful that we're going to end up with all the parties joining in a quality partnership going forward. We think we've made really great progress, and that's happened because of the success they see in South Yorkshire, I believe, that we can get to improvements for all stakeholders faster through a quality partnership than any other approach. As far as school buses go, third-party charter is up, though not as much as last year. The school charter itself, though, is down slightly. So I'd say...
Yeah, outside charter is around about 12-13% up.
Yeah.
School charter is just marginally down this year.
So it's not the boost we got last year, but it's still very healthy.
What were you expecting to see?
Well, I think we've targeted up to maybe 20%, but I think we're still encouraged with what we're getting. I mean, obviously, something growing by 12-15% is good growth.
I mean, when we really turned our focus to this, you know, as you know, it's especially in third-party charter, we were able to make significant progress quickly, and obviously we would like to sustain it at that rate. As far as Greyhound Express,
it's still in the 20%.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what we'll probably do is give a bit more colour on that when we're working to get a date for a Capital Markets Day before Christmas, and I think we'll try and lay that out a little bit clearer for everyone there. It's rather hard to do it on a call there.
Because there's a number of parts to this business with Greyhound Express, with Bolt Bus, with Yo Bus. We are expanding the price points, and what actually goes into the total can get a bit confusing. So we're going to put out more detail. It's 20-30%. It's somewhere in there.
It varies from month to month, to be honest, because of the flexible volumes that they run.
And as far as UK Rail, each of these deals is different. That's all I could really say. We're in negotiations on FCC, and it really doesn't do anybody any good for me to make predictions on how that will play out.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Damien Brewer from RBC. Please ask your question.
Oh, yes, good morning. Thanks for taking the question too, please. First of all, on the cities where you have, like, rejuvenated the bus business and where you've had these, you know, strong levels of volume growth, Could you give us a feel for just for that proportion of the business, what the difference has been on the revenue line and what the incremental effect has been on the EBIT line? Not necessarily giving us the absolute number, but just to give us an idea of the change that's made within the underlying overall bus business. And then secondly, I was just struggling to see it, but it might just be me. Where are you on CapEx so far in H1, in particular with UK Bus, School Bus, and Greyhound? Has that already started to accelerate? Is Greyhound requiring more capital? And what is happening with the CapEx intensity of School Bus? Is there any change there? Thank you.
Okay. Just in terms of the revenue, I think what we're seeing at the moment, we're seeing a shift in the cities to higher volume growth, but we're still only seeing, in terms of revenue growth, the 1 to 2% area. So it's not manifesting itself into a reduction. We're sort of holding our own, and I think we've been quite
flat.
Pleased at how well it's held its own.
Just in those areas.
In some of these cities, it would go down more to start with and then start to grow up. But I think the volume's kicked up quite well.
As far as CapEx, it's still within guidance.
Yeah, still within guidance. Yeah, I mean, we're still on cash capex, so we're sort of 400 or so. So no change to our capital guidance at all.
Okay. And then, therefore, coming back to both those questions, just to be absolutely clear, on the areas where you've cut fares, you know, up to 20 to 30%, and you've seen volume growth, what you're saying is the revenue there is broadly flat and even slightly up? Or were you saying that for the bus business overall?
Yeah, no, we are in those areas. I mean, when we've cut fares, we haven't necessarily cut every fare by 20%. We have to remember, there's a basket of fares that we will have cut, and some of those fares hit the headlines, which are the key fares, and that's all part of the process in terms of putting these changes through. So realigning those fares which are out of kilter with what the market wants.
Okay, but other fares haven't come down as much, and hence your revenue is flat, you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we talk about the 6% volume increase we've enjoyed in Manchester, and there's very big revenue fare cuts for young people there, but we didn't change all the fares by that amount.
Okay, understood. And then just on North America, so what you're saying is on the school bus side, new contracts are as capital-intensive as the old ones they're replacing if there hasn't been any change in outlook there. And then secondly, and just a cheeky follow-on, have you got any update on where you are on fuel hedging?
Yeah,
just on the first, but I'll let Nick do the hedging question. But we are able, as the business isn't growing, to squeeze the school bus fleet a bit because it's easier to cascade buses. But for the most part, if you're bringing in new business, yes, it's just as capital intensive. You need a school bus one way or another. But on the margin, if you allow the business to roll off, you're able to cascade those buses. Nick, you want to do the fuel hedging?
Yeah, in fuel hedging, in the UK for 13-14 this year, with the Great Western SDA, and we're about 80% hedged. And I don't know what you want, Damien, whether you want a diesel price or a price per litre, but a diesel barrel cost of about $126. And in the US, we are about 69% hedged at $123. And then for 14-15, we're 42% hedged in the UK at $121 diesel, and 53% hedged for 14-15 in North America at $118. And then we've got about 15% coverage for 15-16.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Joe Spooner from Jefferies. Please ask your question.
Morning, guys. Just a quick one back on UK Rail. Can you just, the extension that you've agreed on Great Western, how does that actually work looking forward in terms of risk mechanisms? Obviously, you've been operating in the comfort of the 80% revenue support to date, but how does that change going forward in terms of the revenue visibility and ultimately the risk to profits through that extension period?
Well, it converts back to a conventional arrangement where we'll be able to drive revenues to our benefit and to the government's benefit, and we are on risk for that growth.
So even with all of the, because I think the intention is on the long-term franchise to come back, that was going to be designed more as a management contract to protect from all the infrastructure risks. From that point of view, for this extension period, you remain on risk for that?
Yeah, no, that's something that some commentators talked about, and I think even Richard Brown in his report spoke about how he thinks you can make a case for management contracts wherever there is significant work. We aren't in agreement with that. We think there's tremendous commercial opportunity even through this work. It's one of the reasons why we're very anxious to work with the government about delivering not only the long-term improvement but short-term improvements to encourage and continue to grow the market. And we think that a commercial arrangement right through the works can deliver benefits for everyone.
So just to be clear on this extension period, are there any kind of cap and collars
There's no revenue support program. It's only a short period. It's only 23 periods. No, so there's no revenue support program here.
So basically, whatever happens to revenue kind of will drop down to the profit line.
Yeah, it will. But as we said before, you're more incentivized when you're out of revenue support to grow revenue. We've included doubling the marketing effort, and we're very focused with lots of plans to do that. And we also haven't got a ridiculously stretching target within there to achieve.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James England. Please ask your question.
Good morning from north of Berlin. I'm a very small shareholder with 3,000 odd shares, which date from 1993 Badger Line and 1994 GRT. During that period, the capital appreciation has been 10%. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I traveled by rail from north of Berlin through the tunnel up to Scotland and back. During this journey, which comprised trips on 16 trains, there were four problems. Two of them were excellently handled by Virgin and DB. The two others were handled by First and very poorly handled. Stuart Butchers has got all the details. Now, my question is, with perhaps better customer service, might you not have better revenue in the rail group? Because the people on one of the trains I was on, which was cancelled when we were sitting on it, said that this happens a lot. Basically, that is my one question. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I would certainly agree with you. Better customer service always results in a better company. We're quite proud of the progress we have made. We can always get better, and we will be responding to you and not only what happened, but in learning from it in those instances. But I would point out that we are very proud of our operations. TPE has been one of the most successful franchises in the history of franchising. ScotRail is currently was selected as the Public Transport Operator of the Year in Scotland, and those accomplishments were made as a result of better customer service. And so we've got to take into account what happened to you on these incidents, and we'll apply them to continue to improve things. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. I look forward to my next journey on TPE.
Thank you. Your next question comes from John Lawson from Investec. Please ask your question.
Oh, good morning, guys, and Rachel. Just two questions. One point of clarification. You referred in your opening statement to the first student revenues not up as much as hoped. Is that all down to the charter discussion we were having a few moments ago, and where you talked about you were targeting up to 20%, and you actually said you achieved 15%, but I was trying to get mixed up when you talked about third-party charter up 12 to 13. That's one question. Second question really revolves around the additional financials on the extension. Correct me if I've missed it, but you haven't discussed anything about that, or it doesn't appear to be on the DfT site. I wonder whether you could just remind us what the revenues are, passenger revenues, and any guidance on margin.
For the first question, I wasn't really referring to charter. I was referring to the fact that, you know, we took quite a hit, and the school districts took quite a hit from Sandy last year, and so we had an expectation of and a hope that they would have put back a lot more days than they have.
Yeah, we only got back about two and a half million of revenue.
So we should have had an easy, you know, I guess one always hopes for an easier comparison given the revenue reduction we saw last year, and so we kind of thought that would be money in our pocket for going through this period, but they really didn't put back the work we had hoped. The charter, just to kind of size this a bit for you, the charter category is about evenly split between third-party charter and in-house school charter, and it's the third-party charter that Nick was referring to when he said it was up around 14%. Last year it was up more like 20%. And the school charter was flat to slightly under what it was last year. But what I was referring to really was the fact that more school days weren't put in to make up for Sandy.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the Great Western franchise, John, the passenger revenue, or the sort of the modelled revenue, will be around about £850-870 million. And we would anticipate trading sort of a balance margin of around about 3% on that.
Right. Okay, fine. No, that's clear. So just coming back very quickly on the Sandy bit, where you expect you expected more school days to come back. I just wondered, sort of, can you give sort of any more elaboration? Why didn't you come back?
Basically, the schools have the option to add the days in, but obviously it's more costly for them. And I think probably with budgetary pressures, they chose not to add those days in because they can tax them on the end of the school academic year. If you remember, we got a little bit back in March over the Easter period, but we were hoping maybe to get it more back, as it transpired, the school didn't put them through.
Okay, fine. Okay, I understand now.
Thank you. We have no further questions at this time. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Joseph Thomas from HSBC. Please ask your question.
Hello. Sorry, just a quick follow-on from John's, your response to John's question just then, if you wouldn't mind. I mean, actually, a 14% increase in third-party charter, which you're saying is 50% of your charter revenue, sounds pretty good. And we know that charter is high margin, so I'm just trying to understand why your margin guidance on school bus isn't going up by more. Is there some sort of underlying cost issue that's dragging you down a bit at the same time as you're getting that benefit?
No, it's that it's such a small percentage of the total charter.
What is it now?
It's 6-7%.
Yeah, we've built it, and we've built that into our plans in terms of margin guidance anyway. It's part of the actions that we've been taking to develop that part of the business.
I mean, remember we said it's the one bright spot to the grinding out the cost story, and it's always worked in our planning. It's the one thing that if you assume the market's not going to get a lot easier in terms of bidding, it was the one thing that each of these locations could do to help them add to their savings from costs. They could add this revenue. But it's like I said, 6-7%.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Gareth Dunsmore from Santander. Please ask your question.
Oh, good morning. Just wanted to ask you whether you had any sort of plans to sort of copy sort of the Stagecoach Network Rail sort of integration on their Southwest franchise for sort of any of yours, or even submit some similar proposals going forward for rail franchises in the UK.
Well, I think that you'll see close coordination between train operating companies and Network Rail as we go forward. The reason, one of the reasons that arrangement went forward was because there was years left in that franchise, so that there was something to negotiate. And I think as these franchises are renewed and you get to longer terms, you're going to see all train operating companies do that sort of thing. We've had similar experience in ScotRail between us and Network Rail, and indeed it is that arrangement that delivered, I would say, kind of the most high-profile cost savings that we've seen, which was the delivery of the Paisley Canal electrification project. And Network Rail talks about that quite broadly. But I do think that in each of these new franchises, the kinds of alliances that may be struck could be slightly different. So, for example, we would see in First Great Western going forward a project alliance, because that's what's going to be required on that railway. It's just going to be vary based on the needs. But I think this is kind of the next big area for the whole industry to explore in order to achieve cost savings. And I know Network Rail's counting on it in order to hit their CP5 numbers.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced.
Operator, if there are no more questions, we'll close the call.
There are no more questions at this time.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.